Hey, Odyssey fans, I'm Bob, producer of the Odyssey Adventure Club.
And I'm Jesse, editor of Adventures in Odyssey Clubhouse Magazine.
Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast. Hey, you know, Jess, the last few months on the club, we've gone on a wild ride with pigeons and crickets, sea monsters and sprites, donkeys and coachmen, almost all of whom sound suspiciously like beloved characters in Odyssey.
That's right, and all of this mayhem was seen through the eyes of a wooden puppet.
That's quite the trip, and we wanted to get more about the story behind Pinocchio the Tale of a Foolish Puppet.
So we decided to talk with writer-director Dave Arnold, who has shepherded this story since the beginning.
And as we'll find out, the beginning is even further back than you might think.
Let's chat with Dave.
Dave, thanks for being on the podcast with us today.
Thanks for asking.
All right, let's start at the beginning. We've got a lot to cover, but I can't help but think most people associate Pinocchio with the 1940 Disney version, which is now 75 years old. I can't believe that. The original story and character actually go back further than that to an 1883 novel by an Italian writer named Carlo Collodi. Tell us a little about the original story.
Actually, it goes back even farther than that. Before it was a novel, it was a series of newspaper articles. It was a serial, basically, and Collodi was commissioned to write this for the paper. Collodi, interesting man, let's just put it that way, because he started off as a political writer, but he got very, very tired quickly of writing for adults because he said they were too picky. So he decided to write for kids who he felt like weren't picky at all.
Okay.
And so he crafted this story about Pinocchio, which, quite honestly, is not the story most people, if their reference is the film, the Disney film, they don't know Pinocchio, because it is a much darker story. It is a cautionary tale, I mean, much as the film is, but even more so, because Collodi, I don't think Collodi liked kids. He didn't have any children himself, but over and over and over throughout his story, he keeps basically saying kind of the same things over and over. Bad kids have bad things happen to them. Bad kids have bad things happen to them. Bad kids have bad things happen to them. And what his original intention was for this story, and the way he actually ended it in the serial and in the paper, was that Pinocchio is hung from a tree and dies. The end.
Yeah.
And that's
wow.
the end of the story.
15 chapters in, and I think it's twice as long when it became a book, right?
Yeah, well, the kids obviously didn't like that ending very much, and so they rebelled against it, like Pinocchio, I suppose. And so the newspaper editor asked him to continue the story, so the Blue Fairy comes, saves Pinocchio, and then we have a much more redemptive ending downstream. But that wasn't what Collodi wanted to tell. He wanted to scare kids into doing things that are right.
Wow. So the novel being so different from the movie, I heard even the novel doesn't follow even a traditional story structure. And it's really kind of bizarre, almost like an Alice in Wonderland kind of thing. So as you read that original story of Pinocchio, were you thinking, ah, this is going to be no problem for a radio drama? Or were you going, ooh, it's going to be pretty tough?
Well, actually, when we first started talking about the story, the reason Pinocchio even came up as an option for me to write is because we've been looking for not Odyssey but radio theater stories, and in particular I was looking for something that would be that would fall into the classic stories for kids, that was in the classic realm the kids knew but they didn't know the whole story. And so I started to do some research online, and the one story that kind of kept coming up was Pinocchio. And in particular, there are a lot of Christian themes that are present in spite of Collodi's angst towards children. There are a lot of very relevant Christian themes that I thought, well, you know, this could be a good story for us to tell.
Hmm.
And so I pitched it, and everybody said, well, let's give that a shot, yeah.
Huh. So
little did they know.
That's right, yeah. Exactly. So how long ago was that first pitch, and how long did it take it to make it into the actual OAC episodes?
Wow, it probably was 4 years ago, I would think.
Okay.
But yeah, so what I basically did was I sat down, I thought, without even really reading it, I want to see what themes naturally sort of emerge, and so I just started to adapt it. I went from the beginning to the end of it, and I just thought, I'll just adapt it. I got about 20 pages in, and I thought, I can't tell this story. I mean, it really isn't written very well. If you've read the book, you kind of go, this is very heavy-handed.
Okay.
And there's no subtlety or nuance here at all. From the very beginning, there is a lot of violence in it. Things happen to Pinocchio that don't happen in the film or in my adaptation, because I didn't want to dwell on those things either. But so I talked to Paul about it. Paul and I were the two that were sort of working on radio theater stuff. And he says, well, just, I think you ought to finish it. I think you ought to keep going. And I'm like, I'm just telling you, it's not going to work. He says, oh, come on, just go ahead and finish it. So I went through and finished it. And he got about 20 pages in and he said, yeah, you're right, it doesn't work. So there was no really way of redeeming it for radio theater, because radio theater for us, mm-hmm. when we tell radio theater stories, we want to be very true to the source material.
Yeah,
that's sort
yeah,
of our
are.
Mandate.
Right.
So it sort of languished on the shelf for a couple of years.
Hmm. Okay, well, you decided at that point to adapt it for Adventures in Odyssey mm-hmm. instead, and Paul McCusker took a stab at rewriting the script for a kid's radio format with Wit telling the story to Emily. What would that version have been like, and why did we ultimately abandon that one as well?
Well, Paul didn't get very far in either. When he got maybe about 40 or 50 pages in and stopped and said, I think we can make this work. But he kind of handed it back to me and said, if you want to try it, give it a shot. I got into it and started looking at it, and I thought, well, if we're going to do this for Odyssey, I want to do this for Odyssey. I don't want it to just to be a kids radio sort of retelling of the original. I want to make it sort of like what we had done with Pilgrim's Progress mm. or Christmas Carol, some of those sort of takeoffs that we did,
mm-hmm.
where we could take the original story but Odysseyize it so that our main characters, the characters that we know and love, and their personalities would sort of become present in the story and bring it alive in that way to our audience.
With the story being so difficult and you taking a crack at it, Paul coming back to you, why did you stick with it? What was it about Pinocchio that made you go, I really, really want this thing to work?
Well, the way in for me was what I just said was,
okay.
once the characters sort of became a part of it, then I thought, oh, this could actually be a lot of fun.
Mm.
And of course, instantly to me, I thought, well, who would be Pinocchio? I didn't take very long to realize yeah. Jay
brilliant casting
was
move.
The perfect choice for Pinocchio.
Yeah.
And then, and quite honestly, originally what I'd hoped to do was to make it sort of a Renaissance piece where I could take cameos of lines from a lot of our old favorite actors, actors we haven't used in years because they've either passed on or whatever. But I could repurpose some of their lines in the context of this script. I thought, oh, how much fun would it be to have Bart Rathbone in here and you know, Doris Rathbone and Mr. Holstein and, you know, whoever, you know,
mm-hmm.
Edwin Blackard, all these people. And so I started thinking, well, that way, to do that, though, what I'd need to do is just sort of really know everything these people have ever said, and can I find ways to make it all cut together in a way that still told the story of Pinocchio? And as I started sort of looking at that, I realized there was no way to do that, because all of the additional characters that were a part of the Pinocchio story, their section, because they're all, it's all very sort of compartmentalized,
mm-hmm.
their section was so specific and had to be so intentional about what it communicated that repurposing lines from, you know, hundreds of Odyssey episodes would never have allowed me to tell the story properly.
Yeah, there's an efficiency to the way each one of those little scenes plays out.
It is.
That you yeah. probably would have had to stretch it out to try and make it work around the lines.
Yeah.
Well, of course, you mentioned Jay as Pinocchio. Mm-hmm. Jacques Henri is Master Antonio. Eugene is the fox. Of course, partnered with the cat, Katrina, which is
yeah.
fun.
Eugene's great.
Yeah, Candlewick is Vance. So you've mm-hmm. got to have the bully in there. It just goes on and on.
Well, don't forget Harlow Doyle.
Yeah, that's
Harlow Doyle is the
officer. Harlow
Doyle
is in there. Edwin Blackard did make it back in. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We've already alluded to some of the movie and pop culture references.
Uh-huh.
Are there any other buried jokes maybe that you can tell us, maybe things that we wouldn't have even picked up that you know about?
Well, obviously there's a lot of those kinds of things in there. The one that maybe most of the kids wouldn't know is, and Jess, this was completely an ad-lib by Jess Harnell when he's starting, because Jess Harnell did the Elvis voice for
uh-huh.
us,
mm-hmm.
right, the pigeon. And so when he's taking off, taking Pinocchio to the beach, I think, he starts taking off into the air and he says,
Viva Las Vegas, TCB! Ha!
And it just happens so fast. Nate and I looked at each other and laughed out loud, realized we had to have it in, but I don't know how many kids will realize that TCB was, well, first of all, it was Elvis Presley's band's name. It stands for Taking Care of Business. And so a lot of Elvis's jewelry had the TCB logo on there with this sort of emblem, and you know, just a nice little reference for people who know Elvis and love Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of those kinds of things in there. It's, if you know me, I mean, if you listen to a Thanks-Taking story, which I wrote,
uh-huh,
I like those kinds of references. I like, you know, finding those ways in, because it's what I grew up on. Those are the kinds of things I love. And if it can just, you know, bring a smile to an adult or a kid's face, it makes me happy.
And right. Was there a, a hidden meaning to casting Andre Stoika as the owl?
There may have been.
Mm.
You know, Andre actually took, Hal Smith was the original voice of Wit, and Hal was the owl in the Winnie the Pooh stories. And when Hal passed away, Andre took over his role as the owl. So when we had an owl come up, I thought, well, that's got to be Andre.
Oh, yeah.
Come on. You know, there's just no there's no other way in. So that was fun.
The character of Geppetto went through some changes, partially for script reasons and partially due to actor availability. Jack Allen was in this part for a while, but eventually he was written out. Why is that?
Well, you know, Allen is, wow, he's like 94 years old.
Mm.
Still very spry, still, you know, I mean, able to do his job well,
yeah.
But he'd had a couple of health failings, and the closer we got to it, we realized that it probably wasn't a smart idea to count on him for that, because we'd actually cast him for some other roles earlier that he had to pull out of because of health, and unfortunately, I'd love to have had him in. When I was writing the role, I was thinking of Alan,
mm-hmm,
but... it just made sense to not go in that direction.
And then we came very close to actually having the gentleman who voiced Pinocchio in the 1940 Disney movie, have him play Geppetto.
Yeah.
Tell us that sort of bittersweet story.
Yeah, well, Will Ryan knew Dick Jones really well, and he'd been telling me for years, Dick Jones, Dave, you've got to use, mm-hmm, Dick Jones, he'll work with us, I guarantee you. And so Nathan Hubler and I kind of got on IMDb, and we thought, well, let's see, what has Dick Jones done lately? Nothing. Since, 1940? Uh-huh. No, not that far back. But he'd done some stuff. He'd done some Western things when he got a little older, but he really hadn't worked in like 40 years. So I was a little concerned about it. But when this role became available, I thought, well, I think I'm going to give this guy a call and see if he'd be interested in doing it. So I actually got the phone number, called Dick on his phone. He, as I said, he hadn't worked in a long time, so he didn't have an agent we could work with. I just called him directly, and he thought that would be great fun. I said, let's set up a time in a week or so where we can call you and do just a quick audition. I'll send you some pieces of script you can read for us. That'll help me to know how I need to retool the lines to make them sort of in your voice. And he said, that would be great. So I got back here, asked Angie to set it up. She did. Phone rings.
Hmm.
So we had another audition we needed to do, did the other audition, and we said, well, now that we're done, why don't we just call one more time and see if he's there by now. We called back, and it rang and rang and rang, and finally a voice answered, and it was a woman. And we said, hi, this is Adventures in Odyssey. We are... here to do an audition with Dick Jones. And there was this pause, and she said, well, Dick is my dad. He died yesterday.
Wow.
And so it was just so sad. We just felt so sad for her, obviously. Mm. So sad for our generation who had lost this icon, and so sad for the missed opportunity. If we had just, recorded a few weeks earlier, we would have had the privilege of having had some time with Dick before he passed away.
Oh, yeah.
But as a result of that, we did get a chance to meet another actor we'd never worked with before, who also has quite a history in the business, and I think worked out really well. And that was Marvin Kaplan. Tell us about how we connected with Marvin.
If you want to find classic older actors, talk to Will Ryan, because
he's pretty connected.
Will knows them all. Will
yes,
knows
he does.
Them all. And so after we found out that Dick passed away, I called Will, and he said, well, Marvin Kaplan. Now, probably most of the kids in the audience wouldn't know Marvin, unless they've seen, like, the Top Cat TV series.
Oh, right.
Marvin was Top Cat. So Marvin's sort of a, I mean, he's done a lot of different films, a very established character actor. And so we called Marvin, interviewed him for the role. And I'm like, yeah, this would be perfect.
Mm. You know, part two of Pinocchio also has an appearance by an Odyssey favorite, Dave Madden, the voice of Bernard Walton. And of course, Dave passed away recently. So why did you decide to include Bernard here, and where did those lines come from?
Well, like I said earlier, I mean, my original goal was to try and do that with a lot of characters.
Yeah.
Didn't work out. But the one person I knew I had to keep in, because he was just such a dear person to us, was Dave. And there was just this one little bit where I needed a few lines from somebody to take Candlewick away after he'd been bought. And I thought, well, what better place to put Dave in, because his, you know, his curmudgeon-y character can play out so well there. And so it wasn't too hard. Nathan had scoured through for some lines that might work, and one of those plugged in really perfectly for us.
Yeah. You mentioned that one of the things that drew you to the story of Pinocchio was presenting the different themes that were there, and specifically those about wisdom. So now that the story is complete, what do you hope listeners will take away from this adventure?
Well, you know, this culture right now is such a me culture. We're very entertainment driven. It's about feeding ourselves. And as we see in Pinocchio's life, Pinocchio goes off to the land of leisure because every day is Saturday and it's always a holiday and you don't have to work and you don't have to, because he wanted to feed himself. He wanted to live life the way he wanted to live it. It's my life. I will do whatever I want to do. And that's the culture we live in today. And as we can see in Pinocchio's life, and again, this is a cautionary tale.
Mm-hmm.
It's very true. If we live our lives for ourselves, it will not come to any benefit. We'll never be satisfied. It'll never be enough. So what I really hope that both kids and adults take away from this is to evaluate ourselves. Are we a Pinocchio? Is that what we're doing? Maybe unwittingly, without even realizing it?
Mm.
Are we just feeding ourselves, or are our lives giving to others? So I hope the message does more than sneak up on them. I hope it just sort of surprises them.
Mm-hmm.
And really, instead of this blunt hammer that Collodi
exactly
intended it to be, that it's this epiphany of live a life, when we talk about living a life of wisdom, my hope would be that the kids will see that living a life of wisdom is understanding the fear of the Lord, because that's where wisdom begins.
Yeah. Well, Dave, I thought you made a really wise decision yourself by including a key line from Geppetto when Pinocchio finds redemption and becomes a real boy. In fact, let's hear that exchange.
Did I really look so foolish?
You did, because you were. But look at you now.
I don't deserve this.
None of us deserves the gifts we're given. We may work hard and do right with the life we've received, but we're wise to remember that it was a gift that couldn't be earned.
Clearly, that's a departure from traditional versions of this story as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And to be completely honest, that is alluded to in the book, but it's never said quite that way. One of the lines that Pinocchio does say, though, is when he's going through all of the things that are sort of happening and he's realizing the bad choices he made, he says, "Oh, that I could be born again."
Mm.
And that's actually in the book. Mm. "Oh, that I could be born again." But we know that as believers, the redemption that Christ gives us is a gift.
Yep.
And our heart needs to be receptive to that and be able to receive it. And yet saving his dad, doing all those things didn't get him to the point of grace. It was changing him internally so he could receive the grace that God gave him.
Mm. Well, Dave, it's been a pleasure having you in the studio in this episode of Pinocchio. This is why kids and adults love Adventures in Odyssey. Great storytelling, fun, funny, but that really solid message, that life-changing message about Jesus. So thank you for writing this. Thank you for putting it together. And thanks for being in the studio.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
It's always great to talk to Dave. I think Pinocchio has been a real standout in the club, Jess, and watching the recording of this story was a personal highlight for me.
You know, my favorite part was hearing all those Odyssey characters in different roles, like Eugene as a fox, or mm-hmm. Wooten as a cricket, or Penny as a fairy.
Well, if you're interested in hearing more about other fairy tales and how the themes within them can point us back to God, we'll have a link to a Plugged In podcast where I talked to Christian author Jim Ware, who's an expert on fantasy and fairy tales. We talk about Cinderella, Narnia, The Hobbit, and even The Little Mermaid. It's definitely worth checking out.
Well, that's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation of Focus on the Family.
You can hear Pinocchio, the Tale of a Foolish Puppet, in the Odyssey Adventure Club right now. We'll have links to the club and that fairy tale podcast with Jim Ware at witsend.org/podcast. Or you can call us at 1-800-A-FAMILY. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day's an adventure.